We're starting at 8:38. I'm just saying. Shakol Niyavid Baruch. I was waiting for that. I set it up. So this is Le'ilui Nishmat Maureen Kendler. What I'd like to speak about tonight for the entire shiur is the concept of chasidut. Because that's where we're coming in terms of the halachot over here. And how not only does Rambam treat it, but essentially how it is that we see it treated in B'divrei Chazal. But we're going to look at two major sources tonight. One, of course, is the Rama, but the other is the Mesilat Yesharim, written by the Ramchal Rabbi Moshe Chaim Lusato, mid-1700s. I've told you about him. I'll just recap very quickly at the beginning, so that because we're going to be quoting a great deal from the Mesilat Yesharim tonight. The reason why we're going to be quoting a great deal from the Mesilat Yesharim is because essentially the entire book is based around Hasidut. How do I get there? And once I am there, how do I deal with being a Hasid? And ultimately, how do I move myself forward in terms of Hasidut? But the entire book essentially pivots around the concept station of being a Hasid. You might be wondering, well, what does Hasid mean? That's tonight. So I'm not giving it a translation. I'm not going to translate the word simply into an English one, because I would be selling it short. The Ramchal Rabbi Moshe Chaim Lusato, mid-1700s, born in Padua, Italy. A child prodigy, born of very, very wealthy parents. Well, very, maybe not two verys. One very wealthy parents. They gave him a tremendous education. So he was very well-rounded. But he was so learned that he had studied the corpus, essentially, the core corpus of Jewish literature, of Torah literature, including Kabbalistic literature, right? So he studied not only the Zohar, but the writings of the Ari, of Rabbi Yitzchak Luria, Zatzal. And so he begins teaching these ideas. So it's not just that he is very well-read, Lusato, Rabbi Moshe Chaim Lusato. He is a cutting-edge thinker. He's presenting ideas in different ways than they have been presented to date. And the Ramchal is on the cusp. You know, he's coming into the developing world, and where, although it's pre, you know, the French Revolution and American Revolution and the Industrial Revolution, all of these things, the world is at the cusp of these changes in the air. And he was coming after Spinoza and the issue of Shabtai Tzvi, the whole issue of Shabtai Tzvi. So the world was beginning to entertain ideas that had not really been raised before. And he was very concerned about Torah and how it is that Torah was being taught, and that it was important for him that Torah should be put out in ways that people of the time were thinking. This is not a known, very well-known fact about the Ramchal. He wrote 3 morality plays. He was a playwright. Yeah, he was an expert in the Hebrew language. As a matter of fact, even the secular Hebrew speakers recognize him as the grandfather of modern Hebrew and modern Hebrew literature. And so he is using every mode that he finds effective to be able to put out the ideas that he thinks are important. But he was, in himself, a very saintly man. He dies at 39 years old. So he was quite young. By the time that he was 20 years old, from the age of 20 to 22, he got himself into a great deal of controversy because he was teaching these things. He was on the tails of the Shabtai Tzvi problem, and where Shabtai Tzvi had put himself forward as a false messiah. He used Kabbalah tremendously in order to put his message out. So the Jewish world was very hesitant and concerned about the teaching of Kabbalah in general, because they had seen what happens when it's used in ways that were not necessarily wholesome and faithful. But the Ramchal found himself almost to the point where the entire European rabbinate was out to put him down. Right? So imagine being 20, 21, 22 years old. The entire European rabbinate, for all intents and purposes, save a few who were on his side. One of them was his rabbi, Rabbi Yishaya Basan, who was only on his side for as long as he could be, but it seemed to be that from his letter, we have a great deal of letters back and forth between him and the Rabbi Moshe Hagiz, who was the main opponent of the Ramchal, who really wanted the Ramchal out and to be quiet and to be put down and in place, and Rabbi Yishaya Basan, his Rebbe, the Ramchal's Rebbe. It gets to a point where even Rabbi Yishaya Basan says to the Ramchal, he says, I'm having trouble supporting you, because the Ramchal did what he felt was right and said what he felt was right. And there was something that he did that put his Rebbe into a difficult position. And the Ramchal responds to his Rav saying, you don't have to protect me. God will protect me. That's all I need. So we have this written down in letters between the two of them back and forth. I mean, the Ramchal respected his Rebbe a great deal, but he was a very strong, strong-willed, tremendous mind, very, very well-rounded and deeply knowledgeable Chacham. He writes the Mesilat Yesharim, at least as far as we understand, in two versions. The only version that we have in his handwriting is the version that most people don't know. The version that most people know and most people study is a version that is put out in chapters. Yeah, it's put out in chapters, and it uses the Baraita of Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair, which is brought in the Gemara, that says that a person is zehirut meviyadeh zerizut meviyadeh, and so goes through a whole level of how a person climbs the rungs of self-perfection. So it starts with caution, and it ends with what we would call Ruach HaKodesh, divine inspiration or divine awareness, divine consciousness, yeah? And so essentially, the top of the rung is a godly consciousness, right? It's a divine connection. We start with caution. And he goes through the book examining each and every single one of those levels. But in the version that we're going to be looking at tonight, which is essentially, for all intents and purposes, identical to the version that is put out in chapters, this version is a dialogue. It's a dialogue between a Hasid and a Chacham. Right? So he's talking between the wise man and the Hasid. Now, anybody who's been in Shir so far, we know that the Chacham is who Harambam defines as a person who is filled with midot, who is at the middle road, walking the straight path. The Hasid, we're going to find out who that is tonight. We're going to look at that in detail tonight. But he opens this dialogue between the Chacham and the Hasid. He opens with the Chacham seeming to be the hero of the story, where the Hasid basically is seen as praying a lot, saying Tehillim a lot, you know, very concerned of meditation, isolation, solitude, perhaps more accurate. The Chacham is a Chacham. He's read everything. He is constantly studying. He is aware not only of all aspects of the Torah, but all aspects of common knowledge and secular knowledge and so on. And he puts it all together. And he is a very, very learned man. He looks at the Hasidim as though they're not really doing much. So what the Ramchal does beautifully is he opens up presenting the Chacham, and as you're reading, you're thinking, this guy's the guy. And the Hasid has the issue. And in one line, through this dialogue between the Chacham and the Hasid turns the tables on him. This is the way that he turns it down. The reason I'm telling you this is because I want you to have a bit of a background of what it is that we're looking at. He turns the tables on him essentially with this line. He says, well, you admit that all of the mitzvot of the Torah are multifaceted, have tremendous amount of detail. He says to the Chacham, well, of course. He says, I mean, you know, you just pick the mitzvah. What do you want to talk about? Sukkah? Well, sukkah, I mean, how high should it be? What can it be made out of? What about the schach? I mean, you can go on and on and on and on and on. Even the Gemara itself, the Masecha, the tractate that talks about the mitzvah of sukkah, the tabernacles itself, right? I mean, you know, that's only the starting point. We can go on and on and on and write and write and write and write. Isn't that true? Yeah, I said, yeah. He goes, and how are you dealing with the mitzvah of loving God? And the Chacham says, well, I mean, what do you mean? He says, I mean, well, all the other mitzvot, I mean, have this myriad of detail. And the mitzvah of loving God, I mean, have you spent the same amount of time on that one? And he says, well, I don't understand. Why would I spend so much time on it? It's self-evident. Love God. He says, really? So that's fascinating. I mean, you know, it's repeated over and over again in the Torah, that one. And he actually brings a line from Dvarim, from Deuteronomy, and where Moshe says, Ma Adonai Elohecha Shoel Mi'imach, what really does God ask of you? Ki Im Lira Oto, Ula Ava Oto. It separates those mitzvot out, to fear Him, to love Him, Lishmor Kol Mitzvotav, and then at the end says, and keep all His commandments. I mean, these are clearly serious things, right? So, I mean, if love of God is so serious, why is it that you just explain it away this way, saying, you know, it's self-evident? Wouldn't you imagine that as one of the 600, at least as one of the 613 mitzvot of the Torah, which it is, to love God, should have just as much, if not more, detail and study to it to make sure that we're keeping it right? And the Chacham says, well, maybe I have a point. And it's there where the whole story changes. And the Chacham finally asks Rav Hasi, he says, please teach me. And that's what the Mesilat Yesharim is, essentially. How do I need to bring myself into a place that I can connect to God in the greatest and most intimate way possible? So we're going to be drawing from this because we're going to find that the Hasid, his whole purpose of life, essentially, is this question of his connection to God. So let's take a look. Do I have Hilchot Deot? Do we have Hilchot Deot around? Yes, does everybody have it? Okay. So what we're going to do... No?
There's no more.
There's no more?
The previous weeks.
All right. I'm going to read to you then. Okay, so pay close attention. So what we've said up until now is that... Kol adam shede'otav kulan de'ot binoniot, any person who brings his de'ot to be middle of the road, at center, yes, is what we call a hacham. And what we explained that center being was that a person finds equilibrium at center because they are not tilting on either extreme. Okay, that's a hacham. We also explained why we call him a hacham twice, so I'm not going to repeat that. He continues, and here's what we're going to look at tonight. Mishehu medakdek al atzmo beyoter. A person who scrutinizes himself exceedingly. Beyoter means a great deal. So one who engages in self-scrutiny to a refined point, right, to a great detail. V'itrahek mide'a benonit me'at letzadzeh o letzadzeh. And as a result of that self-scrutiny, moves oneself a bit to the right or a bit to the left, off-center. Question is, why would anyone do that? Right? I mean, you're supposed to be in the middle. Yeah. And we just said that you're not supposed to be at all on the ends. At all. Not all the way at all off center. We've said that already. Right? And here all of a sudden he comes in and he says, well, a person who's extremely careful in scrutinizing oneself veers off center, either to the right or to the left, to one side or the other. You know what we call that person? We call that person a Hasid, which seems to be a good thing. So the question that many people raise over here is, what is the Rambam putting out to me? I mean, if you've just told me that I'm supposed to spend all of my time trying to find middle and equilibrium, why now are you telling me that the higher level beyond Chacham, which is what we call Hasid, is one who is now looking to step off the middle? A bit here, a bit there. The funny thing is that although he opens it, makes it worse for us, meaning the question becomes a more difficult question with the next words, because he says, look, the Hasid moves a little bit here, moves a little bit there, for example. And then the example he gives is not a little bit here, a little bit there. Take a look. He says, Ketzad, well, how do I mean? Mishitrahek, let's say, migovalev. Let's say somebody wants to step away from being arrogant. They don't want to be they're in the middle, right? But instead of being arrogant, they move themselves. Notice he says, "Ketzamishitrahek," a person who moves themselves away from arrogance, "ad hakatzeh aharon," till the other end, which is what I mean, absolute humility. I mean, as far as you can get with humility. "V'yesh falruach biyoter," and they become low of spirit, exceedingly. Nikra Hasid. That's a Hasid. This is where Hilchot Deot gets very complicated. Right? What is going on? Right? What is he saying? Again, you've told me, Harambam, that I am not supposed to spend any time on the edges. Not even around the edges, not even on any element near the edges, off center. I'm not supposed to be off center. I'm supposed to spend my time reaching center. So now that I've reached center, you're telling me that the Hasid, who is beyond Chacham, is now moving off center. Not only that, you tell me that the Hasid, as far as arrogance is concerned, is not only off center a touch, like you said before, he's all the way on the other end. Shval ruach biyoter. How am I supposed to take this? Precisely as he presented it. It's exactly right. Once you've become a Chacham, and you are now at equilibrium, you're in charge. You move as necessary. You are not moved simply because you're off kilter. You hear that? This is extremely important because it runs through the entirety of Hilchot Deot. That's why I was repeating it 2 weeks ago, last week. I'm not going to go through it over and over again now, but you understand what I'm saying. You are riding a bike and you are steady because you have found balance. The Chacham rides a bike with balance. Always. Right? You don't see him, he's not doing any of that. He's just riding, balanced. The Hasid is an expert cyclist. The Hasid is so good at this that he can maneuver, tilt the bike even, depending on the terrain that he's riding and how it is that he wishes to ride as he wishes, and stay on top of the bike and come back to center as necessary. Actually, we like to watch those cyclists. We're amazed by them, really. We love the stunts they pull. That's a Hasid. That's the opening definition of Hasid. We haven't even scratched the surface yet. But we have to understand the Hasid in those terms in order to be able to move forward. So the Hasid is not just riding the bike. The Hasid is a master cyclist. He is not just at equilibrium, right? And this is important because there are two ways that a person can be at equilibrium. There's several ways, really, but two major ways that a person can be at equilibrium. I can be at equilibrium constantly concerned that I'm going to veer on either side, constantly working to maintain my balance. That is not in control. I am in control, but I'm not in control, right? In other words, I'm controlling the fact that I'm balancing, but I'm constantly needing to control the tugs and gravity and whatnot that naturally is pulling me on either side. So I'm in control, but I'm fighting to maintain control. Then there's a matter of control and where this is like, I can ride without my hand. I mean, look, Mom, no hands. That's a whole nother level of bike riding, right? I mean, it's a whole nother level, yeah? And where I can ride on any terrain, I can do wheelies, whatever the case. That's a whole nother level of bike riding. That's not I'm trying to keep my balance, right? So you have somebody who's just learning how to ride, who's just beginning, right? And you know what it looks like. They're sitting, they're riding, they're moving, but it just doesn't look like this is, The Hasid is a master. The Hasid doesn't even think about having to maintain equilibrium. It's where he lives. It is the very nature of his being. The Hasid concerns himself or herself with only one thing. And that's what we've heard before many times over. What is needed from me in this circumstance? The Hasid riding the bike does not have to constantly think about balancing on the bike. That's why we say it's like riding a bike. You just know how to do it. The question is, how do I need to ride the bike here, in this circumstance? That's all the Hasid is concerned about. And therefore, the Hasid will move himself. He isn't moved. He will move himself a bit to the right, a bit to the left, all the way to the left, all the way to the right, if necessary, in any particular circumstance, in order to navigate as necessary. He is only able to do this because he reaches Chacham first and moves from there to Hasid. These are steps. These are layers, levels. So I want to look at this because the Rambam continues, and I want to show you in his words that this is the way that he's understanding it. And he says, gives a few more examples. He says, he says, as far as humility and arrogance is concerned, if a person only reaches the middle, doesn't go all the way to the end, he's called a hacham, he's called humble, he's anav, and he's a hacham. He's not a hasid. And that's a midat chokhmah, to be in the middle. You can take this, he says, and extrapolate it to all of our other attributes. You're running in the middle at equilibrium, you're a hacham. You are now able to move from one end to the other, or side to side, and maintain equilibrium at any time that you wish, but you are nonetheless moving to an extreme or towards an extreme to deal with a particular circumstance. You're a hasid. You're a hasid. All it is a definition of terms. He says, by the way, hasidim arishonim, the earliest hasidim, hayu matin de'ot shelahen miderech haemtzait keneged shtei haketzavot. Listen to the language. This is why, by the way, I just want to do a pause and do a little side note here. If anyone ever asks you, why is it important to study Torah in Hebrew? It's because you lose everything without it. And what I mean by that is, not that you shouldn't be here, not that we shouldn't be speaking in English. What I'm saying is primary learning in Hebrew, if we're going to look at the text, the nuance of language is massive in learning. Massive. And that's what when parents used to ask me in my old school in Brooklyn, we had taught everything in Hebrew. We immersed the kids in Hebrew from the time that they were 5 years old. We taught everything in Hebrew. And the parents used to ask me, why you do that? Why you do that? And I used to say to them, The nuance. Do you want children knowing black and white, or do you want children knowing all of the colors and be able to see them in one letter and understand the difference of one letter? So I'm going to show you how we do this over here. Take a look. The Rambam says, Hasidim Arshirim, Hayu Matin De'ot Shelahen. Literally means they would veer their De'ot. Shelahen literally means that belong to them. The language here is not that they got pulled, not natu, that they moved from. Matin means they're doing it to the deot shelahen that belong to them. They're in control. Matin deot shelahen, they used to move their deot, they would calibrate their deot as necessary. That's how master cyclists they were in the cycle of life. They were masters. And so they would calibrate as necessary, which means that they were beyond chacham. They were hasidim in their sense of sensitivity to what a situation required. We're going to have to understand that, because all I've done is define a term for you. Why should I call this person who's able to calibrate themselves a hasid per se? Why is that the word that I use? That's what we have to understand tonight. But clearly, we're clear on the fact that this is what I see them doing. The capability of a hasid is to be able to maneuver and calibrate one's own actions as necessary per circumstance, or per one's own circumstance, whatever it is, but I'm in control as a hasid. Yeah? So I'm not reactive, nor am I responsive. I am proactive, right? I am sensing, I'm dealing, in a sense, what do I mean not responsive? Meaning things aren't just happening to me and I'm having to deal with them. I'm examining situations and assuming my response as necessary. That's my what I mean by responsive. Let's take a look at our sources. I want to take a look at the first thing if I can. Yeah. This is the Rambam on top here. This is the Hakdama, what we call the Shmona Pirakim. It's his introduction to Pirkei Avot, to his commentary on Pirkei Avot. And he says, we looked at this a bit last week, but we'll look at it here as an opening now. Imaya ha'adam shokel b'ma'asav tamid u'mitkaven la'mitzoa. If a person was weighing their actions, right? Remember how we talked about weighing, right? I'm weighing. I'm not being weighed. I'm weighing. And I find myself, I always look to find equilibrium. Adam, says Harambam, this is the highest level of person. A person who is able to ride with equilibrium all the time is the highest level of person. Because, I mean, let's be honest, we don't know how to ride the bike. Most of us are constantly trying to find our equilibrium. So when we get to a situation where I am always at equilibrium, that's a very high level, says the Rambam. Yeah? And he says, by doing so, and this is key, by doing so, I come close to God. So he says, "Bekach yitkarev lifnei Hashem v'yasig et retzono." Why is finding equilibrium coming close to God? Because if I'm finding equilibrium, remember what we said, I emerge. I am not stuck under the weight of a particular attribute. I am conscious. The meta-self that we spoke about last week is in charge. And therefore, I am what God created. I am me. I am fully conscious. I am whole. And I can connect to the source of existence, Baruch Hu, as He created me. The more I am me, the closer I am to God, by definition. In other words, the more that I exist, the more I connect to the source of existence. Makes perfect sense. That's my whole goal. So this Baraitav Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair that I spoke about, where you start from caution and end up with divine spirit or divine consciousness, what we would even call prophecy, is my goal as a human being. This is why the Hachamim say, as far as Israel is concerned, if they're not actual prophets, then they're studying to be prophets. But it's prophecy or bust as far as we're concerned. There's nothing less that we will suffice for. It's either we know God, connect fully and completely as we can to God, or we die trying. That's the definition of the people of Israel. It's always been. How do we do that? Self-refinement. In where I am not ever out of sorts with regards to myself. I am always of integrity, fully integrated. All elements of myself are fully integrated, and therefore it allows for the Spirit of God to flow through me, which is essentially life. Elohim Hayim. So, the Rambam says that is not only the highest level a human can attain, that's how you get close to God. That's why it is important for us to be able to find our wholeness, our complete element of self, our completeness of self, our integrity. It's not just so that we can be good and nice people. It's that being good and nice people ultimately allow us to connect to God and to the source of existence, because we exist more. I'm going to pause here and give you an example of this. Because we talk about, what does it mean to exist more? What does that mean? Well, we all do that. We all have situations in where we exist more or we exist less. I said last time, you talk about things, people will get up and say, how are you doing this morning? I'm doing all right. Not really myself today. Who are you? Well, what do we mean when we say, I'm not really myself today? Who in the heck are you? I'm not really myself today basically is saying I'm out of sorts, which means that I should be sorted in myself, but I'm not sorted in myself. I am not well as far as I'm concerned in terms of my own equilibrium. I'm snapping at people and yelling at little children and all kinds of things, right? When I talk about my capacity for achievement, or I talk about my potential, or think about, for that matter, my potential as a human being, I recognize that there are ranges to this, don't I? In other words, you realize that you can do things better or worse. All of us can. We don't always think of that as an expression of myself, but of course it is, because where is it coming from? It's coming from me, yeah? So depending on whatever it is that I do, I know that there are things that I can do better than I've done them right now. There are things that I could do worse than I've done them right now, but clearly there is a range as to how it is that I live and act as me in this world. That's what I mean. when I say I am more me or less me, or I'm acting in the best me. Best by definition means what? I'm sorry?
Equilibrium.
What does the word mess mean? When I say I am doing my best, what do I mean when I say that? I'm sorry? Fulfilling potential. That's not how I would translate it, but I understand why you're saying that. Best by definition means the most that I can possibly do. So we don't use that really well, do we? That term. I'm doing my best. No, you're not. No, we're not. We're not doing our best. What I usually mean when I say I'm doing my best is I'm doing the most I feel comfortable doing at this moment. I'll leave that with you. I'm not going to prove that. Okay, but that's the truth. And so what we're talking about is a range of action, right? Or not only a range of action, but a range of being. How I am in this world. And we make a mistake differentiating our actions from my being because we have that capacity to kind of disassociate myself from what it is that I do. The fruits of the tree are not of the tree. That goes all the way back to the Garden of Eden, doesn't it?
Yes.
Not for now, but it does. Right? So we go all the way back to that, and that's my question. So as far as a Hasid is concerned, I am, if I'm a Hasid, it's not just that I'm responding to situations, calibrating myself as per what is required. I'm paying very close attention to the nature of reality, aren't I? I'm paying very close attention to what's going on in the world. I'm constantly assessing. I'm constantly weighing. Or as the Rambam says, midagdek al atzmo biyoter. I am constantly calibrating as though I am weighing gold, not beans. The Ramchal writes this in Mesilah. He says, you know, you wonder why we take such careful attention when we talk about our attributes and how it is that we act? Well, are you gold or are you beans? If you were weighing gold, every gram, every minuscule bit of dust of that gold better be on that scale. We don't allow for very much discrepancy when we're weighing something or measuring something that precious. All of it is a question of preciousness. How precious is your life? How precious is your connection to the source of life? Capital L, what we call God. Well, depending on how it is that we answer that question is how careful we will be in our own measurements. What we would call our own midot, which is another term for deot, right? My measurements of self, as they manifest in the world in all of their array, will be measured by me as I value myself and my capacity to live my life. Which means that if I don't really like myself very much, I weigh myself like I'm a bunch of beans, at best. But if I have self-love, as the Torah demands that I do, and how do I know that the Torah demands that I have self-love? Sorry? Kamocha. As in ve'afta l'racha. Kamocha. It's a prerequisite. I mean, you know, you can't even begin to start loving another person unless you love yourself. Everybody thinks it's so difficult to love another person. No, the real difficulty is loving yourself. That's the biggest difficulty, right? Because none of us ever take care of ourselves at all. We don't go to sleep when we should. We don't eat as we should. We don't exercise as we should. We don't study as we should. We just don't. We just don't. We try, but we don't. So at the end of the day, that is how it is that a Hasid measures. A Hasid loves his or herself first because he recognizes and she recognizes that he or she is an expression of God. And therefore, my involvement, you know who was the major proponent of this among Chazal and by Hachamim? Who was it? Who was the one that constantly hit this home, everything practically that he said? Hillel HaZaken. This to Hillel was everything. To the point that he would say, Imani kan, hakol kan. He said, I'm here, everything's here. You don't need any more than that. I mean, well, who else? You know? And then he would say, you know, if I'm not going to take care of myself, then who is? But then he says, Kshani le'atzmi. But when all I am is to myself, well, then what am I, you know, if I don't live in the world? And that's a perfect segue into what we're talking about when we talk about a Hasid. Le'atzmi means all on my own. I'm not sensitive to the world that I live in, then what am I? If I don't realize that I have an existence that is integrally connected to a world around me, then what am I? The Hasid is profoundly sensitive to that world, which is why he's called a Hasid. Because the Hasid comes from Chesed. And Chesed is not just kindness. Chesed is the cultivation of life. Yes? I mean, what does it mean to be kind to somebody? What are you doing when you're kind to someone? Are you not bettering their life in some capacity, big or small? Isn't that the point? Yes, that's the point. But it's not just that. What does that have to do with God? I mean, that's a major question. What does kindness have to do with God? I mean, who is the major paradigm of kindness in our... Avraham Avinu. We know that he is the major man of Chesed. We also know about him that he is the man who discovers God as being one. Those things are interconnected. Because if I recognize that all that I see has its source in one being, primal existence, Matsui Rishon, Yod Ke Vav Ke, what it is that Harambam discovered, what do I know about everything that I experience? What do I know? I know that it all comes from the same place, doesn't it? Don't I? In other words, I know that it's all coming from the same source. And if it's all coming from the same source, then I recognize that on whatever level, even if it's at the most primal level, I am connected to everything simply by way of my existence, because we all exist only because he exists. And therefore, what I find in all of reality is kinship, don't I? Even on the most basic level. I mean, as we get up and become more complex, well, that kinship perhaps is diluted somewhat, but at the core, it's where we all come from. It's kinship. I am kin with the world. I am of kind with the world. Which is why my kindness always has this sensitivity to what I find as being my kind and what is kin. The question is, how broad does that vision go as far as I'm concerned? So as far as Avraham was concerned, his chesed was a result of his understanding of God. That's what we call chesed. Chesed is the cultivation of life. It's what Avraham dedicated his life to doing. It was the one way that he knew to serve God. He didn't get very many mitzvot. He got a few that God told him personally. But other than that, what he knew to do in terms of the service of God was to cultivate existence. The person who dedicates their life to being sensitive to the nature of reality and truth, essentially sensitive to the nature of existence, is a Hasid. They are constantly calibrating and questioning. What is true? What's real? What's happening? How do I need to act in truth and response to what's happening? That's a Hasid. Take a look at the Ramchal over here on the second, number two. Amar a Hasid. Look, you should know. You know, people talk about Hasidim all over the place. They use this word, Hasidut. Hasid, Chasid, Chosid, what is it? He says, you know, people have all kinds of ideas when it comes to this. This is the Ramchal talking in the 18th century. They have all kinds of ideas. Bli tor, bli tzura, bli tikkun. They use the term without any real attribute, attributing it any meaning, without any real form, without any real clarity as to what it is that they mean when they say it. And you know why they do this, he says? Because they really don't pay attention or learn. Which means, as my dear David pointed out when we were going over this, he said, they're just like those people who don't pay any attention and they don't calibrate. How do I know that? He says, I mean, look, these are people who basically base their ideas on Svarari Shona. Where's Svara Rishona? Where's Svara Rishona? Wait, hold it. Where am I? Svara Rishona, Svara Rishona, Svara Rishona. Where is it? Am I near it? Yeah, here. Oh, because on my thing it's on to the same line, right? Yeah? So he says, Halchu b'mashin yizdaben lahem lefi Svara Rishona. They go with what they first think. Thought pops into their head, that's what they go with. That's not a Hasid. That's certainly not a Hasid. The definition of a Hasid is that constantly questioning what it is that they're thinking and how they're perceiving. They didn't delve into the depths of the issues. And certainly, lo shaklu otam. It should be an aleph. Shaklu means what? They didn't weigh them. Nothing's been put on a scale. Over here. B'mozneah hochmah, on the scales of wisdom. They certainly haven't been placed. So he says, that's not a Hasid. Well, I'll tell you what a Hasid is. A Hasid, he says, V'yada'ata hayom, at the end, ki a Hasidut, do we have it over here? Do we have it over here? Do we have it at the end? V'yada'ata hayom, ki a Hasidut, you shall know that Hasidut, when we talk about it, means is davar amok meod, is quite deep. To achieve, meaning the grasping it, getting there, it's deep. It's not easily at hand. Il nachon, to do it right. V'hum yusad al yisodot chokhmah. It is based on the foundations of wisdom. Rabbah. Why wisdom? Why wisdom? It's based on chokhmah. You cannot be a Hasid until you're a Hacham. Why? You got to know what's going on. There's this Calvin and Hobbes cartoon. It's my favorite. You know Calvin and Hobbes? Please say you know Calvin and Hobbes. Yeah. Calvin and Hobbes. So Calvin's, there's this one frame, you know, where Calvin says, how old do you have to be before you know what's going on? You know, no one knows what's going on. I have no idea. So this whole thing, it is constant refinement of our actions. Questioning what I do, not simply because I feel like it, or because I move to it, but what is necessary. Really, I mean, the truth of the matter is only a hacham can achieve this. Can't be a hasid without being a hacham. But the hasid, as he says, yeah, this is, it's important, right? So he continues to say, I want to look at number four for a minute. Okay? He goes, if that's the case, yeah. He says, "Gmilut haHasidim hu ikar gadol leHasid." Doing kindness is a major source of being a Hasid. But why is it Gmilut haSasidim? This is very important, right? We can kill with kindness, right? That's why Chesed on its own is not a good thing. I've mentioned this before. Chesed on its own is not a good thing. Chesed on its own could be terribly pernicious. Kindness can be devastating if it's not done with care and sensitivity to a situation. Which is why we will say that you kill people with kindness. You smother them to death. The main reason is because any time that I give anything to anyone that cultivates their life, their element, that element of life that I'm cultivating is based on me, not them. So I take away from them their capacity to be able to stand on their own two feet as unique individuals. Which is why we have to be profoundly careful about when it is that we give anybody anything. It has to be terribly scrutinized. My goal in giving someone always has to be camel-minded. Which is why we call it camel chesed. Gimilut hasadim, gamal. Why camels? Because camels are these amazing creatures. They are the most weaned creatures on the planet. In what capacity? They are able to carry water on their back and traverse massive expanses of desert for days on end without needing to have another water. They stand on their own 4 feet. That is the kind of chesed that I need to try and achieve. And that's the kind of chesed, ultimately, that is tov. Which is why when we talk about God doing chesed every single day, 3 times a day, in our prayers, we say that He is gomel hasadim, gomel, he camels hasadim, yeah, I'll explain what that means in a second, camels hasadim, tovim, good chesed, which means that there's such a thing as non-good chesed. The word gamal does not only mean camel in Hebrew, it means wean. Vaygdal hayeled vaygamal, and the child grew and was weaned. It's just a concrete term, right, that's moved into the abstract. So when I do good for someone, I am constantly looking to do it in a way that weans that person from needing to rely on me, so that that person is able to maintain their own self, stand on their own two feet. Do you know the kind of scrutiny that it takes in order to be able to do that? The kind of care and sensitivity to circumstance, personality, situation that it takes in order to be able to do that right? Do you know how parents agonize over this? Of course you do. If you do, a good parent agonizes over it. A weak parent just gives. Which is why we will call that spoiling the child. Just spoils. It's just not what we need in order for this child to grow up and stand on his or her own two feet and become a full-fledged individual. Becoming a hasid, where I can actually be called by that word as a definition of myself, is not just that I'm doing kindness. I am kindness. That's what a hasid means. That's all another level of being. And in order for me to be able to say, I am kindness, do you know the kind of sensitivity that it requires from me to be able to scrutinize not only myself, my thinking, my circumstance and situation, but the situation and circumstance that's around me? That, my dear friends, is love. When you get to that point, and you are able to sense so well and so deeply, not only what I'm feeling, what I'm doing, what I'm thinking, but what another person needs, and how I can help that person, and that I find myself connected to that person in terms of my life, and therefore able to give them something that will allow them to stand on their own two feet, that's love. The Hasid loves. The Hasid loves. So we have to understand that this is a whole other level, right? So we're going through layers of definition. It's not just that the Hasid is able to sense a situation and calibrate his attributes. It's not just that the Hasid is able to now recognize not only himself and constantly scrutinize and question and give kindness as kindness is needed. The Hasid is not only the embodiment of kindness, the Hasid is the embodiment of love. It's what it means genuinely to love. Notice that in this love, there is constant scrutiny, constant measure, constant questioning of appropriateness and boundaries. Constant. It's always sensitive, so that I shouldn't crush another person or leave another person out in the cold. That I'm always there as that person needs me to be. I'll take a question, we'll see if I'm going to answer it. Go ahead. Yes. You can. I just said. You could ask me a question. I'm kidding. Go ahead.
If I'm not mistaken, doesn't Hasidim have a connection with fear? And so therefore, the suggestion that kindness... So does that mean that...
Yes. What is the fear that we're talking about?
That fear and kindness are connected somehow?
Yes. That's what I'm just mentioning. So I'll elaborate in order to be able to bring that out. The fear is a fear of missing the mark. The fear is a fear that I haven't calibrated appropriately. I haven't assessed the situation appropriately. I haven't cared about the things that I need to care about appropriately. I have allowed myself to go, or I have allowed myself to act out, or I have allowed myself to assess a situation, or I have allowed myself to tell somebody something that they shouldn't have heard from me. I mean, this has to happen all the time. Let's say, okay, I love this person. I'll give you a perfect example. I love this person. I see this person is doing something that is self-detrimental to this person. I recognize it. I think that I recognize it as being self-detrimental, right? So self-damaging. My job as one who loves this person is to tell that person. But before I tell that person, there is so much that I have to calibrate and question before I actually engage in doing that, because I could kill this person. I could devastate this person. I could lose this person. Which is why we don't do it. Or if we do it, we could care less. That's not the way to do it. If one does not fear appropriately as to overstepping, understepping, speaking inappropriately, whatever it is, that is the element of fear. When we're dealing with God, all the more so. Does that help? Okay. So now let's understand, yes, how it is that we bring this into a question of love. I was going to point out to you, but I'm moving forward on it. The Rambam talks about a prophet, and he says that the highest level a person can achieve is prophecy. The prophet is the highest hasid. Let's take a look quickly. I'll show you very quickly, right? A number five. Yeah? A number five. It's number five? That's number seven. No, no, number five. No, no. But it's not number five. No, no, no. Down, down, down. Is it ever? Oh, okay, fine. You find it. You find it, David. You find it, fine. You know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about? The little, the not Safaria text. You know, like it's we added it in? No, 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 no. It's not all the way down there. It's not all the way down there. No, no. Up, 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 up. Up, 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 up. Up, 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 up. It's not there? That's the beginning, right? Okay, I'm going to read it to you. I'm going to read it to you. I'm going to read it to you. All right? He says, it's on my number five. He says, maybe we put it in later, after I sent it in. After I sent it in. That's why. That's why. Umipne zeh, says the Rambam in his Hakdamah to this, again to Pirkei Avot, he says, Ra'iti le'archiv ma'amar kvar amru azal, Hayman deba'e le'meveh hasideh le'kayem ile de'avot. He says, one who wishes to be a hasid should study Pirkei Avot. He opens Pirkei Avot saying this. Yeah, the ethics that are brought on Masechet Avot. Ve'en etzlenu ma'ala gedolah, says, we do not have a higher level for humanity, says the Rambam. Ela gedolah mehasidut, ela nevuah. The highest achievement of hasidut is nevuah, is prophecy, which is what? It's talking to God. That's what our whole goal is. That's what we're doing. And so the Rambam says this several places. So I want to take a look at number seven, if we can. I hope it's number seven. Oh, there it is. Look, there it is. It was number 19. Okay, go ahead. All right, so. All right, we want Mesilat Yesharim, Vikuach, starts by Hachaminu Zal Umru Kul Hasam. Yes? Yeah, here, here. It's number nine here. It's number nine here. Number seven on my little thing here. So we're talking about constant questioning and measuring. We're talking about fear. We're talking about always calibrating and being sensitive to the nature of reality, which means opposite from the Ramchal's opening as to the man who is essentially saying, whatever comes into my head is what it is that I'm going to go with, and that whatever my first opinions are the opinions that I'm going to hold. Rather, we are talking about people who are never, ever sure. They will have working definitions. And the truth of the matter, let's think about that. A wise person always has working definitions, never certainty. Working definitions are okay, it's all you've got. So your working definitions are running as well as they can be, given what it is that you know, until you know something else that might question your working definitions. But one must always be ready to re-examine the working definitions of one's life. Always. So the Hasid is always careful and sensitive. And he says over here, the Ramchal, he says, Kol hasam orchotav ba'olam hazeh zoche ve'ro'e b'shu'ato shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He brings a Gemara. The Gemara says, a person who properly plans or places out, puts out his way in this world, does his own reconnaissance missions for his own life, he will see in the salvation of God, he says. Ki ineh ha'adam afir shupikeach al atzmo en b'kocho linatzel ulei HaKadosh Baruch Hu ozro. I mean, he says, let's be honest. What we're talking about over here is seriously difficult. Right? I mean, it sounds easy to be open. It sounds easy to be constantly being able to think and use working definitions and so on in life. But the reality is that we are terribly stuck. And we are working with a thinking mechanism that is not programmed for truth. We're working with a thinking mechanism that is programmed primarily for security and comfort. Which means that I have to really work out myself out of my securities and comforts in order to be able to get to the bottom of what's actually going on in my life, in the world, and that around me. Which means that I live a life of discomfort, which is not human. It's not what we like. So we have to love truth so much and love existence so much that we are prepared to live in constant discomfort. And there are some people that hate discomfort so much that they will kill anyone who makes them uncomfortable. And that's a concerning thing. We are not immune of that. And we immediately find a whole bunch of reasons why we should be killing the person that is making us uncomfortable. But the question over here is, if I'm constantly dealing with my own reconnaissance missions of my life, I'm going in and checking out where it is that I need to go and how I need to go and so on and so forth, I may be successful. But the reality is, says the Ramchal, and the Hachamim say, if life isn't helping you, it's curtains. Except they don't say life. They say God. If God isn't helping you through this, if you are not running through your life as a joint endeavor with the source of existence, it's curtains. I mean, there's really no way out of it. There's a limit. There's a limit to how much we can do this. I mean, there's going to be a point in where I just want to relax. Even if I don't think I want to relax, my brain will be telling me in its own way, relax. I won't think I'm relaxing because I've told myself that I'm not relaxing, but my brain will have me relaxing without me realizing that I'm relaxing. How? It'll tell you, you're right. Well, okay then, I can relax. That's all it needs to do. So we need God's help in this. We need to want God to help us in this. We need to ask that He should not allow me to relax, in the sense that I shouldn't just find equilibrium in the idea or in the sense that I no longer have to ride my bike, or I no longer have to keep moving to ride that bike, or that I'm off on some other path that I don't even know where it is that I'm going. I think I'm going the right way and I'm just off. I'm off. We need help with that. So the Hachamim tell us in number 10, next thing. We took this stuff out. He's really good at how he does this. Yeah. I don't worry. Anyway, the Hachamim say, it's off kilter, I'm sorry. Ironic, isn't it? The Hachamim say, yeah, I barely know how to ride a bike. It's not an example. Habali taher mesayinoto. They assure us that when a person genuinely wishes to come to purify themselves, to find refinement in themselves, they're helped. They find help. If it's a genuine desire. At the same time, בדרך שאדם רוצה ללך בה, מוליכין אותו. Where it is that a person wishes to walk, well, that's where they take you. So one has to be very true to oneself and question, where do I want to go? Where do I genuinely wish to end up? And you ask God for help. There's no better help. I mean, it's just as high as you get, you know? I mean, you don't get better help than that. It's difficult. It is massively difficult. But when we dedicate our lives to it, as though everything is riding on it, indeed it is, well, it changes the whole question of its value to us. And we really don't allow ourselves to mess up with what we might call in tennis unforced errors. Yes, please.
So, in order for this growth, we need to be outside of ourselves, and so you talk about reaching up to Hashem. These psychologists will tell us there's elements of this of therapy where we need to reach out of ourselves and talk to another, mm-hmm. a therapist, to do this. So how is Hilchot Deot in this sense different to therapy?
It's not, per se. The Rambam also tells us that. Also tells us to reach out to someone. But he does this in the second chapter. Interestingly, because the Rambam moves backwards. The Rambam starts at the pinnacle, and he moves us backwards. Does it several times. Not only in Hilchot Deot, there's some thing in Hilchot Teshuvah, but he moves us backwards. So first he's talking about the ideal. In chapter 2, he talks about people that are sick, that really need help. He says, you know how to get help? You got to go talk to somebody who's been through this, who knows how to deal with this stuff, and actually deal with this stuff. That doesn't mean that I'm not asking God for help. God's going to find me a good therapist. I mean, everybody knows how hard it is to find a good therapist. I mean, you know. And it's not worth it. If you don't have a good therapist, don't spend the time or the money. You need to find a good one. But when you find a good one, it's tremendously helpful. So you pray for that. Yeah, that's stepping out of ourselves. That's recognizing that the ultimate help comes from God. I may have tools here in this world that I can use to be able to help me. And those things, ultimately, I ask God to open to me. Because there's a lot of stuff. I mean, it's like finding a needle in a haystack sometimes. God helps you find needles in haystacks. Yeah? I hope that, does that help? Yeah. So, talking about love, and this is where we're going to end tonight. Even though it's 9:40. This is where we're going to end tonight. I want to look at the last Mesilat Yesharim of the night. That we have to get up. Actually, there's two. I'm going to look at the Rambam and Hilchot Teshuvah. That was 14 on my thing. I don't know where we are. Yeah. Actually, before, I'm trying to think. No, you know what? Before the Rambam, I want to look at some. No, that's no. I want to look at the Mesilat Yesharim first. The Mesilat Yesharim, for me, is number 15. Shoresh HaHasidut. Do you have that? Shoresh HaHasidut, Humash HaAmruzal. You have it?
Yeah, it's number 5.
Okay, number 5.
Sure, Shoresh HaHasidut.
Forgive me for this. We get out the link to the source sheet as early as we can, but then I sit and look at it and I say, no, I don't want to put that in, and I take that out. So you get a different source sheet than I have. I apologize. I have to try and calibrate that better, and I apologize to Rabbi Zarum because I'm probably making it. He's just being on top of things and I'm not. Shoresh HaHasidut. The source of Hasidut. Humash Amruzal Ashra Adam Sha'amalo B'Torah Ve'oseh Nachat Ruach Le'otzro. Interesting pasuk, verse he brings. He goes, the source of Hasidut is a person is content and happy who engages and toils in Torah and causes the spirit of his maker to be calm and pleasant. Ha'inyan, he says, what this means is, ki hinei mitzvot mutlalot al kol Yisrael kvar yidot. And he goes, look, we know what the mitzvot are. The Torah says them out. We can study them. They're clear. The commandments. Hen chobatan yidua. We know what we're obligated to do. Ad hech ani migmagat. Omnam mi she'ohev et haborei itbarach. However, someone who loves the Creator. He's moving here. He's saying, look, we know what we are obligated to do. Everybody knows what they're obligated to do. However, one who loves the Creator, ahava mitit, true love, lo yishtadel v'yichaven liftor atzmo b'ma shekvar mefursam min hachova asher al kol Yisrael bechlal. He would never suffice with simply dealing with and accomplishing what he's obligated to do. Nobody in love does that. Who is truly loving, no one who truly loves does that. You never say to the one that you love, look, that's all I really need to do. That's not love. One who loves, Yikrelo kama sheikrel ben ohev aviv, says it's like a child who loves his father. That's the example that he gives. It's the lowest example that he gives. The Rambam gives a different example, as we'll see in a minute, right? But he says it's like a child who loves his father. Sheilu yigale aviv et da'ato galui me'at. If he wants to show his father that he loves him, all his father needs to do is hint at his thinking. And the son or daughter will take that hint and do everything that they can to show that they heard it and that they heard what it was that mattered to him. And so they did it. My mother-in-law, who is the oldest child of Chacham Ovadia Yosef, they had a very special relationship. So she knew that he loved Abdul Wahab. Abdul Wahab was an Egyptian composer and singer. He loved Abdul Wahab. So she made it her business not only to organize all of his cassettes and to catalog them, but to learn all of the songs. And so she would sing with him. She was the only one who would sing with him. He never even said it. She just knew. That's love. So that's what he's trying to say over here. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows, this is what I'm looking for, that's all he needs to show to a Hasid. Because if the Hasid is loving, then the Hasid is interested in showing, I love you. The amazing thing that the Rambam says, which we're not going to look at inside, but it is on your pages and it is on up here, but I'm concerned about time. The Rambam says, that's why the Hasid, as far as the Hasid is concerned, the things that we do that are evident, as far as the mitzvot are, that any human being would recognize, look, don't steal. Now we know that. Honor your parents. I mean, that's just being good. I mean, it's being good, proper citizen. Don't eat meat and milk. I really do. I mean, wonderful people eat meat and milk all the time. It has absolutely nothing to do with what I would certain just sense as my obligation as a human being. But the Torah expresses to me that this is something that is of value to the one who brought it to me. So I'm going to be concerned about that. That's how a Hasid keeps a mitzvah. Not because, look, God said, I mean, okay, so I got to fulfill it. Rather, the Hachamim said, you know what a Hasid says? A Hasid says, you know something? That cheeseburger looks phenomenal. And truly, I would love to have one. But you know what? I'm in love with somebody who told me I shouldn't have it. So I'm not going to. That's the way that a Hasid thinks. Anybody who's ever been in love knows precisely what that means. I love what you love because I love you. I mean, it may not be what I choose for myself. But because I love you, what you care about, I care about. So I will go with you to the ballet. Not only will I go with you to the ballet, I will learn about the ballet. And I will have the conversations with you about it. Do you know why? Because I see when I speak about it with you, your face lights up. And you are enchanted. And you're filled with joy. And anything that I can do to make you do that, I'll do it. Because that's what I love. That's a Hasid. A person who is unable to do that cannot be a Hasid. It's not easy to do that. It's not easy to do that even in our own relationships, in our own lives, in our own people, that we tell ourselves that we love. And we may indeed love them on a certain level. But as Eric Fromm says, and I mentioned this, I believe, last time, although I can't remember which particular class I said this, but I say it all the time. As Eric Fromm writes in The Art of Loving, immature love says, I love you because I need you. Which means that the need is the focus. I need, and therefore I love. Mature love says, I need you because I love you. Love is the focus. And even if it means that I have to send you away because I love you, well then by all means. The Rambam and Hilchot Teshuvah, we're going to end with the night with that. I'll tell you how it starts. Ha'oved me'ava osek b'torah mitzvot. Yeah? Harambam in Hilchot Teshubah writes as follows. And he is writing here about this love that we're talking about. One who serves from love. Osek b'torah mitzvot. He engages in the Torah and its commandments. Veholech min tivot ha'chokhmah, walks in the paths of wisdom. Lo mipnei davar ba'olam, for no ulterior motives. Lo mipnei yirat ha'ra, not because he's afraid something bad is going to happen to him if he doesn't. Lo kedei liyirat ha'tova, not because he knows something good is waiting for him, a pot of gold is waiting for him at the end of the rainbow. Ela oseh ha'emet mipnei shehu emet. He does what is true because it's true. It's what's real. It's what exists. V'sof ha'tova lavo b'glalan, good always comes from what's true. Ma'ala zohi ma'ala gedola me'od. Now the Rambam says you should understand this level that I'm talking to you about is a very high level. It is a level of love that we are not innately wired for. It takes a great deal of work for a human being to bring down the selfish drives that stand in our way to being able to love this way. It's a very high level, says the Rambam. En kol chacham zuchela. Notice what he says. Not every chacham merits it. He doesn't say en kol adam zuchela. En kol chacham zuchela. Not every wise person who is assessing the nature of reality and thinking wisely about his life and the life around him and so on merits reaching the point in where the inside and the selfish gene is killed. Those are the other sources that I have on the page that you didn't even read, which the Hachamim say, one who is able to love has a hollowness inside, not in a bad way. It's where that selfish gene is put to death. And all that's left is the self that can love. That not every hacham merits. You know who merited this? Who reached this? Avraham Avinu, the man of chesed. Avraham, our forefather, he merited this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu called him his lover. Ohavo, Avraham, who loves me. He was one of the few that got this this term by God. The only one, really, that we have in Scripture. Lefi shelo avad ela me'ava. He only served out of love. This is a level, nonetheless, that we were commanded to achieve for our own good, so that we could be human beings who love. And we were commanded to love God. That command is one that God charges us with in order that we should be able to reach the highest levels of our being and know what genuinely it means to love life, to love the source of life, to love our own existence, and ultimately to love the source of all existence. As it says, Ve'afta et Adonai Elohecha, and you should love the Lord your God. When a person loves God, immediately he does all the mitzvot out of love. Because he realizes, well, I mean, this is my connection. And this is what he's shown me that he's interested in. I may not understand it. I don't really get the ballet. But I know you love it. And because you love it, I do. And that's all that matters. Next week, we will close the chapter, and we will talk about the way of God, and ultimately how this ends up playing into it.
Thank you very much.